Oh, we've done it. Welcome to the Artifact Podcast, episode 2. My name is Sunsen, joined by Conrad, Slacks, and Swim. Hello, friend. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. Good to be on.
How about you introduce... Why are you lower now in audio? Talk.
He's whispering.
I can just start shouting.
That's good.
For the rest of the podcast.
That's
yeah.
Okay, great.
All right, Slacks, you're banned from doing that. I fucking hate that sound so much.
It just started. I just started doing it 5 minutes ago. I can't do it anymore.
All right.
It's not fair.
Swim is wondering what he got himself into. Can you introduce yourself for people that perhaps are from the Dota audience specifically and don't follow card games that closely?
Sounds fun. I know exactly what I got myself into. Yes. So I'm Swim. I'm a Gwent streamer. Background in other card games, though. If you haven't heard of Gwent, you probably haven't heard of me, but I've also played Hearthstone, Magic, Faria, Duelist, any of these digital card games under the sun. I think I even played Elder Scrolls Legends.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
What's Faria? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, before. Right? Exactly. That's
Oh. Sorry. Didn't mean it like that, friend.
So what I want to do in the intro, instead of doing it in the outro, is tell everybody how they can watch or listen to this later so that they can do that beforehand. So... the podcast is now available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, pretty much everything. So if you use a podcast program of any kind, it should be available. If not, just tweet at me, I suppose. The VOD on Dota Cinema. And if you don't have a podcast program or anything like that, you just want to listen to the audio, autofaction.gg/TAP. So the acronym for our show is TAP. What do you guys think about that? Is that okay?
TAP?
I'd tap that.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that kind of a magic term more than anything, though?
It is?
Yeah, tapping. Yeah.
It's when you turn your heroes into defense position.
Mm. Yeah.
See,
oh!
Player here.
Okay. The RSS feed is also there. And one last announcement before we actually begin the podcast, although I guess we've technically started. For people that watched the stream with me and Slacks yesterday, I want to apologize to you, and you need to apologize to us, okay? And I want an apology from Slacks specifically because he made
me
do this.
What did I do?
So... We obviously things weren't handled the greatest way.
What? And, I thought we did great.
Well,
where's this coming from?
Under the circumstances, we did great. I agree. There were 2,300 something cards to go through. We went through half, and I wanted to kill you. You wanted to kill me. We were gonna announce the winners today, but we don't have time. So we're going to have to delay that just a little bit to be able to make sure that we can actually review them all properly. But on the show, we will show a few of the cards that we really, really liked and interested what Conrad and Swim also think of them. They're super legit, I think. So
yeah, the last like 5 reveals.
I'm excited. And then we'll talk about the actual reveals of...
Oh, yeah.
Which is what everybody's here. Nobody wants to see us. I know. So one thing, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but... Because I think the reveal stuff is going to take quite a bit of time. But I wanted to piggyback off of Swim here and talk about some of the very big differences that you've noticed with other card games versus Artifact.
Yeah, I think Artifact is a game that plays, I mean, as we all know, very differently from other card games on the market right now, right? There's a lot of really interesting nuances with the initiative system and the lane system, which are just features that... other card games really don't offer. Certain games, like Elder Scrolls Legends, tried a lane system, but it really didn't work out nearly as well as I feel personally like Artifacts does. It adds a lot of depth to the game. I think that in terms of kind of the main implications of these systems, one of them is that when you compare it to Hearthstone and Magic, you're not really playing on curve quite as much. And I think they've really nailed that. People aren't talking about this. Everyone knows that lanes are cool because you have to choose what lane to commit to, right? The really cool thing is that a lot of other card games fall too much under just like playing on curve. And in Artifact, it really bypasses that because you draw 2 cards and have 3 mana pools.
Yeah, we were talking
about
this.
There's a lot
more
decisions about passing. Yeah, absolutely.
You and I have played a shit ton versus each other recently.
Yes.
It's been the 50-50, right? Ratio.
Yes, pretty much.
Oh, I was actually kidding. I think you've been beating me a little bit more, but I appreciate
you. Well, I was trying to be, you know, I thought you might not have.
Conrad and I, on the other hand, you got wrecked, buddy.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Oh, well, we'll play
kidding.
A few more matches.
We played
some aggro decks. It was fun. I enjoyed those games a lot.
Yeah, but what Swim is talking about is super interesting because it's not something I really thought about.
If I may, for our new card players, because many of us are from Dota, not me, of course, but what exactly is a curve?
Okay, so, no, that's very good. See, that's professional. So, in Magic and Hearthstone, so much of the game is built around just utilizing the resource of mana, right? You gain one mana a turn, whether the land system or Hearthstone's crystal system, and if you spend more mana than your opponent, you kind of win the game. Like, you have to... In a really good majority of situations, so you kind of build decks around just using all of your mana every turn, and it kind of simplifies the game. In Artifact, you won't use nearly as much mana. You will make decisions about when to pass, when to sacrifice mana to play for initiative, how to distribute your tools better. Like, there's a lot more nuance to decision making.
Like at PAX, it's something that we really noticed, where players would just play something that's in their hand just to play it. Because that's exactly. Like when I play Hearthstone, that kind of is how it is, right? Maybe not 100%, it's like 90% or something like that. So it is quite a bit of a different experience for sure.
Yeah. I'd
like to say, just for here people that don't know, I've never seen or played a different card game than Artifact.
I believe it.
I think that card games are lame, but just kidding. But, so I'm very interested in picking your brain in this podcast, because I don't know what all the lessers have been doing all these years. So this will be interesting for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Stop trolling, Slacks.
I'm not trolling. I'm talking. I'm getting them used to it. We're here for like 2 hours, baby.
That's not the plan, 2 hours. Go ahead.
I did not plan up for 2 hours.
Very lonely. Please don't go. All right, anyway, so this is so can I ask you a cool question? What's one thing that you miss from other card games that ain't in the Artifact, huh?
Interesting. I would say kind of like a lot of forms of, I don't know if I can actually answer that question. Might be a little NDA territory.
How about this one? This is an easy one, because we talked about this last week. When new players get into the game, they really miss mulligans. I said that after, like, I felt the same way coming from Hearthstone, but then after a couple weeks of playing, I completely forgot about it and I don't even care anymore. So interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's something that if you come from another card game, it will be very, very noticeable at first. No opening hand mulligan. It's kind of a meme that Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of has the same problems, and a lot of people despise that about Yu-Gi-Oh! I think that it's hard to say. It's definitely not as big of a problem as it seems at first. But at the same time, I think they easily could add like a simple mulligan system. And that could work pretty well for the game, honestly.
Connor, do you agree with that?
I don't know. I kind of look at it as something like it's just another thing you have to be thinking about when you're in the deck building process for Constructed, right? Like, there's a chance I can't mulligan. So I have to build my deck accordingly to try and maximize the amount of chances that I would play a card on that first turn. Or, you know, you talking about mana ramp earlier, you do still want to play cards, because, like, you know, when you ramp and you have 5-7 mana cards, it feels terrible when you get to the, you know, until you get to there.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with mulligans, let me tell you. But for those in the chat who
Slacks.
What exactly is a mulligan?
So at the start of a card game, normally you have an opportunity to exchange cards in your hand for redraws. And there's a bunch of different ways to do this. Like Hearthstone, Magic, and Gwent all have radically different mulligans.
Oh, so it's a redo.
Yeah.
Yes.
It essentially makes sure that you have a better chance of having a more optimal opening hand, right?
I remember those. When I was in grade school, when I was in kindergarten, we got to do redos on all the games all the time. But when I grew up, I fucking dealt with it like a grown-ass man. So so all their games have that. That's cool. But okay, go ahead.
Have you guys ever felt like, because we can talk kind of vaguely about this, because I personally have not thought of an experience where I felt this way, where the opening hand, I've had some bad opening hands for sure, but I've never felt like I lost because of it. I don't know if it's because of the decks I'm playing or if the mulligan just actually doesn't really matter that much because you build around it via the deck creation and whatnot.
I think it definitely makes games harder. I just remember a game I played at PAX, and I ended up with 3 Thunderhide packs in one hand, and I was like, oh, this is pretty terrible starting hand here. And, you know, I had some trouble, and I got to a point where if the opponent had a certain card in their hand, they could have won the game, but I guess they didn't draw theirs. So, you know, I think it also evens out, right? Especially when you're playing in BO3s and larger scale stuff. These decks, you know, you're going to see somebody be able to win one game very easily, and then the next game, perhaps, you know, based on how they built their deck, end up causing, you know, significant issues with ramping up and bad hands, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to talk about aggro decks. So let's preface this first by saying that the PAX decks, I would not say, especially the blue black, do not for me is not really a rush deck of any kind.
Yes,
I mean it is kind of a rush in some respects, but it's not consistent. It's not what I would consider a normal aggro, right? And I know Swim and I have been playing a lot of aggro versus each other, and Conrad as well. So interested to hear your guys' thoughts on how aggro feels in Artifact.
I think aggro is, and this goes back to comparing it to kind of other mana-based card games, I think aggro feels really good in Artifact. Actually, as someone who plays a lot of Hearthstone and Magic, the common complaint is like this idea of smorking, which is like brain dead, hit face. Artifact doesn't have that at all. Aggro requires a ton of decision making because it's very mobility based. You have to be able to jump your heroes around and often debate people into lanes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting parts of Artifact to me is the deployment phase, which I don't think really exists in a lot of other games. It's almost like poker sometimes, you know, where you can all in on one part and, you know, potentially leave one lane barren and hopefully see if you can beat the other person to the punch, either hitting 80 or two towers really quick.
Played a little bit of Hearthstone back in the day, and you feel kind of helpless when you're playing as a smork deck, right? A face rush deck. I need to stop looking at Slax's face. His face animations are really annoying.
Could you explain smork deck for us, us webs?
Smork is when you go face. I don't actually know it. What it's like, you're so dumb you're an orc. Is that the meme?
Yeah.
You just hit face.
SM orc.
Because I know SM orc is an emote on Twitch.
Okay, black red deck.
So anyway, no, but the feeling is way different in Hearthstone because you feel super helpless a lot of the times because you might just have a bad matchup. I mean, you could still have a bad matchup in Artifact, but there's always something you can do. There's always a decision you could have made because there's three boards, right? Like,
yes.
The best that I've ever done with a rush deck is win on turn two. That's pretty much like the best possible scenario, but everything has to align, and it doesn't happen very often, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine it now, actually.
Yes, there are a few cards that have yet to be announced that really help with that. That's for sure. So one thing I did want to talk about, and we kind of alluded to this a bit in the first episode, the direction of Artifact, all of everyone's opinion. Maybe some of you have changed your opinion since last time, because it has been a bit, of how other streamers are going to approach the game, right? Because there's a lot of different things we can talk about. Like, do Hearthstone streamers come over? Even though they might get less viewers, but there's more money for tournaments. Is it just a pro player versus streamer thing? Like, what are you guys' thoughts?
I think a lot of people will try it out, especially in the first couple of months. I mean, I know I will. That's my plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at it and it's like, it's a big Valve game coming out. Obviously, there's a lot of big names kind of behind this project that people are excited about. I think, exactly what Swim said, you know, there's going to be people trying it out. And if it doesn't work for them, they're just going to either go back to their other game or look at something else for the future. I know Gwent, the next 2.0, I guess whatever it's going to be called, is coming out really soon. So, you know, mm-hmm. Gwent streamers are probably going to look at that as well. And but I look at Artifact and I go, oh, this could be, you know, something really interesting and something that people really, really want to push forward with.
I think it depends a lot on the not the streamers, but the audience. I mean, will people want to play the game or will they want to watch the game? Thus is the enigma of streaming. For a lot of Hearthstone, it's this is going to sound really offensive, but it's not. Hearthstone guys, I love you. But yeah, Hearthstone's sure. Easy enough of a game to watch someone play it while playing it at the same time while, I don't know, make a sandwich. Like, it's just inherently, there's not a lot that you have to put into the game. You just,
while on the toilet as well. You might as well throw that in there.
It's a good multitasking game. But for games like Artifact, typically games that, you know, are more fun to watch someone else play than play yourself are the ones that... people like, and I think Artifact can be that because it's a stressful game. There's always shit going on, and I think it's where the people go, not so much the other guys. Guys that are in it for the money, they're never going to last. I mean, they always say they'll go over and do shit for the money, but if they hate it, they hate it.
That's an interesting point.
They'll tear their apart.
That's an interesting point, because my stance is that streamers that are popular will probably try it, won't get as good a viewership. Maybe they will originally, but over time, probably not as much as Hearthstone is my assumption. So they'll end up going back to Hearthstone or something of similar nature. Pro players, though, that... I mean, you can say they're doing it for the money, because they will switch. I guarantee you they will switch to Artifact if they're good.
The money.
Because there's so much more money in the scene. There's just, it's not even close to how much more money.
They're doing it for the competition, not for the money.
Yeah, the Dota players are doing it for the competition.
Hey,
it's the competition.
Why not both, guys? You know, like, you know, yes. I think you're going to find a lot of people really interested in, yeah, they're going to, you know, do a large scale tournament. People want to be a part of something like that, especially that tournament has more prize money than I think most card games have ever seen. And that value is going to draw in people. And, you know, it might not keep everybody, but I think it'll keep, you know, a certain subset of those folks that are really enjoying the game.
I don't know, man. I mean, who cares, honestly, how many viewers it gets personally? I mean, it's like, look at Dota and League of Legends. League of Legends always beats out viewers, but Dota 2, at least, you know, they're not a sexist company. I mean, it's just like, I'm saying, like, doesn't matter. Viewership doesn't matter. What matters is quality of game, prize pool, and fun. And we don't have to be the biggest stream card game. I don't fucking care. It's all about, do we garner enough community? Let me tell you a story about streaming. Swim, you know about this. Is there a big difference between having 300 people watching your stream, but those are your loyal viewers, or 4,000 people watching it? For me, I don't see, you know, a lot changing. You don't get that many more donations. You don't get that many more subscribers.
No, it's not
just,
really.
No, it's that loyal fan base that keeps you going. That's why Dota 2 is one of the best games in the world. We have the biggest esports prize pool, not because the most people play the game, because we have the most loyal and smartest people. So that's the kind of people that are going to be playing Artifact.
I love these, like, backhanded freaking negs.
These are backhanded!
Every sentence it slacks.
Love somebody to dissect everything Slacks has said and just tally it up, like a point system here.
That was just facts. There's a lot of things that Dota and Artifact... Well, Artifact, I'd like to talk about this later. Don't let me forget, Sunspan. I want to talk about their great rollout procedure. I think it's very cool comparative to how Valve has handled other games before.
Well, you can talk about it now if you want.
All right, fine.
We can segue.
So let me talk about the rollout procedure and how it's different than other games Valve has come before. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing really cool. Typically, Valve has this curtain of, like, you know, no one must know what's happening, delayed for unknown reasons. And now they're doing things like giving dumbasses card reveals, like Sunspan over here, and I don't know, doing this PAX thing. It seems like they're being a lot more intuitive into the community and looking back into that. So it's very interesting. It's very positive behavior. That's one thing I will give a compliment to our competitors out there. Blizzard is amazing at that. So is Epic Games. They just see their community want to do things, and then they provide feedback and change it, whereas Valve has kind of struggled in that before. But I think they're changing things up for the Artifact. It's been pretty impressive so far.
Yeah, it feels very community-based in a lot of ways, which, I mean, Dota is to some respects, but there's this clear separation between Valve and everybody else, right? Where... But the Artifact, it doesn't feel that way right now, which is super cool. It feels much more intimate, which I like personally.
I mean, I think that's a big reason why I think they're trying to push the game too. You know, I don't really play Magic, but when I do, it's only with my friends, right? And if you're starting to build these communities and building these groups together, it's only going to be a positive feeling, you know, amongst these people, right? And and hopefully you have all these people kind of grow together, and maybe, you know, they are not interested in the competitive, maybe they're not even interested in streaming, but I want to draft with my friends and have fun with that side.
Yep, totally agree. All right, so I wanted to talk, actually Swim wrote these, the mechanics that we can briefly talk about, and then we can start getting into more juicy stuff. I think maybe we save this first, the initiative stuff, for we talk about Tidehunter, right? Because that was revealed yesterday.
Sure.
Oh, my heart. I keep forgetting. You fool. Don't talk about Tidehunter.
It's all good. We can talk about stuff now. It's cool. I do want to talk about what everyone's opinion on mono decks, duo decks, tricolor decks, and the unseen, it seems, rainbow decks. Anybody want to explain what these are for the novices out there?
Take it, Smarty.
It's kind of the same pattern you see in something like Magic. You have kind of color mixing as a deck concept, so you can run like an all red deck, and that would be a mono red. Duo is mixing two colors, and tricolor is mixing three colors, and rainbow is being dumb, basically.
Hey, hey.
Okay, let's, before we get started, does anybody think a rainbow deck? It's not going to work right now, but could it ever work?
What are you talking? I'm kicking the shit out of every person in this chat room with my rainbow deck. You glad I've played this? Is one of the greatest decks in Artifact. All right, that deck is dope. Okay. For those of you who are not familiar with that deck, it is a deck of 40 improvements only. That's it. You get the best improvements from all the different colors because improvements are artifact centric. They're not like your typical card games, baby. I don't know that. Do other games have improvements?
They're kind of similar to Magic.
Whatever. It's not the same. It's all improvements. And let me tell you, the trick of that deck is no one knows what the fuck is happening until it's almost over. And then there's this moment where they're mentally broken. They go, wait, why does the middle lane have 12 fucking... Wait a minute. And then the anger hits. I've beaten all three of you with that deck. I remember because I made a list. Rainbow decks can work.
I mean, I don't think you beat me. I think you're actually lying. I've never played against that deck.
All right, we'll see.
I did play against one of Slax's decks entitled the Derpy Dozen.
Classic deck.
I need to commission Slax to actually name my decks because I'm not very creative.
The problem is you have to name the deck first, and you have to build around that name. That's his process.
That's his entire thing.
That's the problem. You might not get the deck name that you want.
Let me tell you, Leave It to Cleaver is not the greatest deck, but there is a lot of cleave in there. All right, anyway, let's focus up. So we were talking about the viability of different colors and stuff. Yeah. Of course, I feel like almost it's always more beneficial to have two colors than one. I feel like having three colors is a risky, but it can certainly work. And the rainbows are the rarest of gems, but they can win games. They can win games. It's just you set your own difficulty in Artifact. Do I want to be a moron? Black red. Do I want to actually try to be a little bit of interesting? Maybe three colors. Maybe one color. Do I want to be a god among men? Rainbow! Ride the rainbow, baby!
Does anybody agree with anything he just said?
Absolutely not.
Please continue. Elaborate.
Absolutely not. I think you're going to find the most viable decks, at least that I've seen, have been duo-colored or mono. I've seen some tri-decks. I don't know if they really work. They're kind of more just kind of... I think people just trying things out and testing things out, and... I believe Jake might be the only person I've ever seen run a rainbow deck, and it was Ait.
Whatever.
Wait, you guys actually think...
It's called a splash, right, Swim? A splash deck? A splash of blue or whatever?
Yeah, you use splash to refer to basically just like a small amount of a certain color. Like, you splash an artifact would probably mean just one hero. So you could have like a green splash blue, which is four green, one blue.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
That's nice.
I think they're viable. There's some cards that we can't talk about yet that their intrinsic abilities are good enough to just have them exist without any other cards from that color. That's no true. Examples will be provided. However,
we're all thinking of the same cards right now.
Are you talking about signature cards then, or?
No, I'm talking about some cards' innate abilities are so good that sometimes just having a splash of them is not a bad thing with three, but. The standard will always be two. I think that the most broken combos are going to be how does this black interact with blue, and they complement each other really well. Mm-hmm. I have seen some mono greens though that are like better than anything else. The greens, baby.
I think monos Dave's are very underwhelming personally. I don't know if that's just me. I think they're very one-dimensional and not great. Green might be the best of them, but I wouldn't consider them super viable. I think the duos are definitely the creme de la creme right now.
I think that the most interesting thing to kind of consider there, I think that analysis is probably correct. Like, duo decks tend to be the way to go. But as the card pool expands, like future updates come, mono might have a bit of power creep, because like as the card pool expands and you have more options within a singular color without having to reach to others, you do incur kind of less of the downside of the color casting system. Because in artifacts, uniquely, you can only play spells or improvements or creeps of a hero you have a color of, right? And being able to kind of eat that downside entirely with mono will be pretty strong in a bigger card pool.
Now, this is something I'm super interested in, because again, I've never played other card games, but seeing how they evolve from the initial set and then going in and finding how things get broken. Can you give me some examples of stuff like that in other games, Swim? What's like some ways that just like, oh, something got completely effed? And do you see anything in Artifact that you think could go that way?
You mean in terms of something getting stronger than it should be, right?
Right, because they added an expansion, and then one of the original cards just went off the rails. I mean, that's always going to happen in games, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a different evaluation for like future potential rather than current potential. I can think of a couple cards in Artifact that would follow that pattern, although I can't really say them. However, honestly, mono colored decks as a concept is a fairly decent example of that. Like, I personally predict in something like, I mean, duo decks are kind of the way to go right now. In something like 12 or 18 months, I think mono might have its time.
You know, Tri might even have its time. Now, there's a card that we're going to go over that somebody sent to us. It's not a real card, but it allows you to play colors of different variety, which
that's cool.
Would be super cool and make tricolors extremely viable, in my opinion, right?
I would love to see that kind of thing in the game.
Yeah, and I think as sets grow and as things, you know, there might be multicolor, there might be other things we don't know yet, right? And I think there's a lot of speculation on what the next few sets are going to look like and even what this set is, and it's going to be interesting to see how that grows. I also think mono is not as underviable as I think people say. I think mono can be really strong sometimes currently in the game.
Okay. All right, so last thing before we start showing some cards, first the fake ones that people sent us that we think are super cool, and then the actual
future cards as
reveals.
We them.
What is everybody's favorite and maybe something that can be improved on thing in Artifact currently? Without, of course, something that is already known to the public, because we can't really, you know, do anything hardcore. Does anything come to mind? For me, my favorite thing, because of the three board system, being able to move around from board to board, the strategy involved in that, which ties in with aggro, feels unbelievably satisfying, I have to say. More satisfying than any card game I've ever played. So that's easily my favorite thing about Artifact right now.
Yeah, I mean, it creates a situation where you have to like leverage resources into the right places as opposed to just kind of generating the most resources. I think that's really cool. My personal pick would be the initiative system. I think that it creates, I mean, people like it, right? Like people on Reddit have talked about it. You know, the strategy that it creates isn't necessarily apparent at first, though. I mean, a lot of what you get from initiative is the idea of, you know, do you play for initiative or don't you, right? There's so many situations where if you overplay for initiative and try to commit to it for a turn where maybe it's not winning you the game, you're sacrificing the ability to play cards, right? When you take the early pass and play for initiative, knowing when to do that or not is really, really skill testing, like ridiculously so.
Yeah.
I think the coolest thing, sorry, go ahead, Connor.
No, please go ahead. Or do you want
to? I think the coolest thing is Roshan. I like when the fourth board peels out and then all the cards have to go and fight Roshan.
Sax, we weren't supposed to talk about that.
We weren't. Nah. just kidding. no, I just feel like I like how it's set up with the system of two towers or an ancient. There's so many times that you know, you feel like the game is over and you've abandoned that ancient lane and you're like, oh, goodbye. You'll be fine. 80 HP, no problem. And then somebody comes up with some insane plan where they end up getting like 100,000 damage in one lane, you know? So I just love that different system. I like different avenues for victory. I think it's pretty fun. So that's my favorite part by far. Not that I've played any other games, but Go Fish. And before we move on all the way, Swim, I have one more question for you, but go ahead.
Conrad. Let Conrad finish, please.
Fine.
I just said
please, Conrad, continue. Don't let Slack ruin your moment.
Go ahead, Conrad.
Please, Conrad, please. Conrad, please.
Can you start?
Yeah. All right. Okay, I'll go.
Interrupt us if you have to.
Sure.
Whatever you want, you can just start.
Oh my god.
I think for me, it's actually kind of a combination of what Swim said and what Suntan said. It's kind of shifting expectations, I think. So, you know, either that's moving around the board, deploying where somebody doesn't think you're going to deploy, and just kind of, you know, I think I remember that game that me and Jake played at PAX, and there was like a move that you did, and I was genuinely super surprised by something that happened. And, you know, when somebody does that, I think that's super interesting. And I felt like I've seen that more in these games than ever. I think other card games that I've played, oh, I kind of have a good idea of how their deck is going to go forward, what's going to happen. And Artifact kind of lets you, I call it like playing like, it's like playing jazz. You kind of get to go along with the flow a little bit. You get to try something you don't necessarily, you're thinking it on the fly and you're coming up with something new.
That's a cool example. I like that.
I like it.
Analogy for artifacts.
All right, Slax, you had one more thing before we move on?
Swim, yes. I know a lot about Hearthstone. I know a decent amount about Magic. I don't know shit about Gwent. Can you tell me just about Gwent in general? Like, what's the game like? What's it like to artifact? Because I'm interested because every personality that I've met from Gwent that's been involved in the beta and stuff, they're all fucking great. I've not met one Gwent player where I'm like, well, this guy's a piece of garbage, where it's happened a lot with the other communities. But for Gwent, they've all been special, sweet little boys. What's going on over there? Why is it such a good game?
Honestly, it attracts a kind of... In some ways, it's a similar audience artifact, and in some ways, it's very different. It's almost a similar style of gameplay because you're fighting for kind of 2 out of 3 warfare. It's two, you need to win 2 rounds instead of 2 lanes. And it's similar to Artifact just in that it basically tries to break the mold of what it means to be a card game. Like Hearthstone basically just took Magic the Gathering and simplified it and tried to market it to people that weren't really into card games and had a hard time getting into MTG. Well, no, like that's not,
got
even,
him, buddy.
That's not even say it. That's just like,
good,
that's
one, Swim.
Good one.
Yeah, but Gwent and Artifact are both, you know, Gwent more so 2 years ago, Artifact now, they're both really breaking the mold. Like, they make you think differently from what you expect from a card game in a lot of ways.
Cool. All right. Sweet. Well, that's what I wanted to hear. Neat.
Actually, I do have one quick question. So I played Witcher, and I played Gwent in that. How different is Gwent in that compared to the card game itself?
It's pretty different. I mean, the standard gameplay is the same. You alternate playing cards, and then you play for a pass, but everything else is different.
Is like, it kind of, yeah, it's got like a, at least a lot of the flavor from that, or is it
yeah,
just...
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Cool. Absolutely.
Have you ever played Yu-Gi-Oh? Cool.
Oh, yeah. I loved Yu-Gi-Oh. I was a big Yu-Gi-Oh boy in high school. I had you know, one other friend, and we would play Yu-Gi-Oh on the bleachers together. It was great.
Now, don't laugh, but I thought that this whole thing was a meme. I really thought that it was just a TV show and people were pretending like the card game was real until like very, I'm talking like 2 months ago. I did not know that there was an attached card game. I thought people were just being hilarious. So I'd join in there and be like, oh, the Shadow Realm, guys, I got trapped. And people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But so that's real, which is cool. What's that like? How come is that? It's been around a really long time, hasn't it? Isn't that like one of the older card games besides Magic?
It is one of the older ones. It actually launched in, I think, 93 or so.
Wow.
Maybe it was a little later. But Magic the Gathering basically came out a little bit first, and Yu-Gi-Oh kind of took that format and tried to make it kind of more accessible in a bit of a way. I don't know. Maybe that's the wrong way to phrase it. I don't know. It's been a roller coaster, though. Like, some people regard it as kind of like a not a great competitive game.
Really? Is Pot of Greed that bad?
Yes.
Are people spamming Pot of Greed?
Yeah. That's the only card I know because I used to watch the show.
The show will tell you what Pot of Greed does. It's true.
Pot of Greed allows me to draw 2 more cards.
Oh, anyway. That's where that meme came from. Okay.
Yes.
That makes more sense. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Let's move on, my friends. Let's go on to the reveal section. Is everybody ready?
I don't want
This is the juicy stuff.
Well,
the
this is going to take stuff? A while, man. This is going to take a while because we got
okay,
quite a list
one,
to go
one
through.
More note. Two more things about Yu-Gi-Oh! One, Artifact, I will leak and confirm it does not have an Exodia card, and it's what I want the most.
What is Exodia?
I want you. Exodia is like you get five different cards. It's how Yugi beat Kaiba, bro. Don't you know?
No. Does it look
you get
like
arm of Exodia, you get leg of Exodia, you get face of Exodia, five face. Cards which spawns Exodia, and then he just fucking boom! He just cock blocks the whole game and ends it.
That's like a Hearthstone card as well, then, right? There's a similar one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So great. I want Artifact to have Exodia. I want it to be like leg of Gaben, arm of Gaben, and then an animation of Gabe just comes out and he flips the fucking table over or whatever. That'd be so dope.
Like isn't that what Meepo is? You just play five Meepos. And
five Meepos?
Yeah, win the game.
Is he revealed? I don't know.
Do you guys all have the stream on, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, because you're going to need to follow along this way. It's the best way, I think.
Oh, okay.
If you're listening to only audio, don't worry. We will describe them in full detail. So let us begin. So again.
I have one more point.
God damn it, Slax. We're changing subjects. No more Yu-Gi-Oh.
While we're on Yu-Gi-Oh, do you people have any idea what Artifact will become in 5 years? Valve has innovated in AR technology. I don't know if you've watched the International, but we have heroes that can appear on stage and do movements at any time. Now we have a card game.
Oh, God.
Maybe one day will be mobile. I'm talking about TI9, two dudes standing up there with a fucking sleeve going, I summon one of the heroes that has been revealed already. And then they fucking, and they just come. It's coming. Yu-Gi-Oh! For real is coming. Valve Software are the only ones that can do it. I'm telling you guys.
Hey, I'm in. I'm in.
I'm fucking in.
I'll watch that.
I can't wait to trap hot chicks in the Shadow Realm. I can't wait to fucking become an Egyptian god. I can't wait, guys.
Are we allowed to switch subjects yet, Slax?
Hang on.
Please.
For someone who didn't know it was an actual card.
No one's waiting for anything. Go.
You do know a lot about Yu-Gi-Oh. Sorry.
I watched the shit out of that show. I was actually watching YouTube videos about the show on Yu-Gi-Oh when I was in the Artifact beta because I thought everybody was making memes. So I went back and watched the whole fucking series.
You have to do your research. Yeah,
months.
Makes perfect sense.
I really thought people were just like, dude, this is just like Yu-Gi-Oh. And I'm like, what episode are they talking about? I'm not kidding. Like, I really just watched the entire thing. Trying to figure this shit out. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, Conrad, before we move on, do you have anything to say about Yu-Gi-Oh?
You know, I've actually not watched the show or played the game. So I really actually have nothing to add.
Continue the conversation somehow, Conrad. Please extend it.
Really have nothing to add. I apologize.
That's too bad.
All right.
So I think we are finally ready for reveals. Again, this is going to take a bit. So the first three cards that we're going to do are fake cards. I need to be very clear. They are cards that were submitted to us that we liked a lot. And again, just to preface to reiterate what I was talking about earlier, we have not picked the winners for this contest yet because it's taking forever. So we're just going to have to delay it a couple days. But these are the ones that we like a lot so far. And you guys can follow along on stream.
Big dick move it would be for us to just post real Artifact cards and be like, guys, these are just fake cards.
Yeah.
Queen of Pain.
All right, here we go. So you and I love this card, Slax. Rubik the Grand Magus. It's a blue hero. He has 2 attack, 6 health. His continuous effect is called Arcane Expertise. The first spell you play this round can be played regardless of color. And his card... signature card is a 0-mana spell steal spell, and it says this card is a copy of the last spell your opponent played, except its color is blue. What do you guys think?
This card was created by Prixt as well, by the way.
Yes. I can't read it here, so just keep doing that for the next two. What do you guys
Prixt?
Think?
I think a spell steal at 0 mana seems pretty strong.
Well, no, you get the card.
Yeah, you get the card, and it's whatever the mana cost is. Like, the card is in your hand, and it turns into whatever the last played card is.
Got it.
By the end
of it.
But in blue. No thoughts.
Arousing discussion.
I don't know. It just, yeah, I wish I received these a little bit beforehand, you know.
Shut up.
No, this first reaction is the best reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of strong.
Yeah.
Blue has the ability to, you know, do a lot of spell. Like, it's already a spell-based kind of group. And if it gets spells from other things, I think that makes it even more strong. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, though. I think this definitely brings viability to that tri-color that we were talking about earlier. And, I think it's really interesting.
I think it's cool because of its... it only works if Rubik's alive, kind of like Crystal Bait, you know? Yeah. So if you make it your priority to kill that Rubik in that lane, that's very cool. And that's another thing that I love about this game is, like, different cards being specifically better in different lanes, I think is super neat. Like, you know, having a Zeus in lane one so that he can Thunderstrike everyone else and clear out the other ones, whereas if he was deployed in lane three, you'd never get the chance. So it combines two very cool things that I like in the game.
I think I actually think this is pretty well designed in a lot of ways. I love Spell Steal. I think it's, like, pretty great design. It's pretty balanced. It kind of gives the opponent options for counterplay, because, you know, the thing about the signature cards is, you know, they're in the deck, right? Because you can see the hero. So if you see Rubik, then maybe you're kind of wary about what spells you're playing and giving him on the next turn, right? Spell Steal is amazing design. I think his passive is probably a little too abusable, though. Giving mm-hmm. you access to other colors that cheaply.
Yeah. Mm. I do like the okay. flavor. I think it, like, really...
What does it taste feels like, Conrad?
It nails it.
Delicious. I think it just, like, really... Yeah. Will you make it is the question. I think for me, I think the most interesting part is that it really brings... this card feels like Rubik from Dota,
yeah.
which I think is always yeah. a really important thing, especially when you're creating cards that already exist or hero or around heroes that already exist within the game. I think this card screams Rubik to me, which is always a really nice feeling.
Right. All right. Again, these are not real cards, friends.
These are not real.
The next one is also not real. It is Sand King. He's a black hero with 4 attack and 7 health. He has a reactive ability called Caustic Finale. Deal 3 piercing damage to enemy neighbors when a unit blocking Sand King dies. His signature card is the 5-mana spell Burrow Strike. Move a black hero to another lane. Stun its enemy neighbors this round. That one's very strong, by the way.
I was about to say, it's like...
very strong.
Whew, that's a lot of damage, but I love the concept of it. I think it... really brings once again it feels like the card in the game, you know, or it feels like the hero from Dota. Burrow Strike's really interesting, you know, moving from lane to lane I think is a really cool concept, and stunning its enemy neighbors, you know, I could see it
should probably stun only the one player maybe or one
yeah
person.
And even then I think that's pretty strong, like
6 mana
deploying it, yeah, or it says 5 I think, but
I know if it was 6 mana,
yeah, something like that. But, like, I think, yeah, the concept of moving from lane to lane and, like, you know, you're able to use this with any black hero. So keeping it locked to black, I think, is really important as well.
I think it's cool. I like those kind of artificial timers that the game sometimes puts on. For instance, like a bristleback. And sometimes people are going to die. But if it's in front of a bristleback, you don't want that dude to die. You'll make special sacrifices to make sure that doesn't happen. So... I like cards that do that, and having a caustic 3 piercing damage when the unit in front of it dies, it affects how your enemy plays on, like, a meta level, I guess. So those are cool to me. So I really like this one. But
yeah, man, it nails the flavor. Like the 3 piercing damage does definitely need to be toned down a bit. Although I do like the kind of incentive it creates. Like if it was lowered to something like more along the lines of 1. I mean, I think it's really got the right idea. Both effects need to be toned down a bit, though.
Yeah, I agree. But I love the idea. All right. This next one is the final fake card we're revealing. I like how I'm saying revealing the fake card.
The fake finalist.
This one, Slax in particular, absolutely loved. It is Roshan. He's a red hero. 6 attack, 2 armor, 20 health. He has a reactive ability called Curse of the Immortal. The death effect of the hero is add Aegis of the Immortal to your opponent's hand. Aegis of the Immortal is a 25 gold item, and it reads, equipped hero has damage immunity and rapid deployment. He also comes with 3 mana spell called Slam. Choose a red hero, deal 2 damage to its enemy neighbors.
This card is so fucking cool. You have this gigantic meat cake in a red deck, which, you know, reds don't have too many ways to, like, move around and stuff. They're all about power, so he picked the color perfect. And if you kill him, you get this huge reward for your game that could potentially win you the game. It's like this super all-in card. I love it. And there's only a few cards, like Coup de Grace or Apophis Blade, that would allow you to just, like, straight up kill the character and be terrible. But, oh, it's so neat. I love the idea of putting in a card where if it dies, you're fucked. It's so cool.
Yeah, I like that concept too, where, oh, you have your... you have something, but if you don't protect it or you provide a negative feeling for it, it ends up being much more injured and, like, hurts you in the long run, I think. Especially with the agents. Like, that is a... I think that's a really cool, really, really cool card. Particularly the item card.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I actually love this kind of effect, and I'd like to see more of this kind of thing in game. A lot of other card games kind of have these, like, you know, under-costed, overstated units that have this, like, downside when they die, and it creates this, like, mini quest for the opponent, basically, where
they're
really heavily incentivized to kill it, and if they can't, they get punished. If they do, they get rewarded. I think that, like, mixing up incentives like that is great.
Isn't that cool too, though? You get to, like, you know that they're on a mini quest to kill a card, so you do the counter mini quest to, like, have them alive, all in on a card, and then ruin that, which ruins the whole game. It's freaking great. I hate this card because of fucking Phantom Assassin. Always. That card ruins everything. Coup de Grace, the most broken goddamn skill in the stupid game. Remove the skill. It's so goddamn dumb. But now it's kind of cool because you're playing a Roshan deck and then you're like, oh, Christ, they got PA. I'm screwed. Like, that's kind of fun. So, but I hate it. PA is garbage.
Just for everyone out there, the reason that Slax hates PA so much is because of me. All right, so we're going to move on now.
Because this asshole.
All right, so these are the reveals that were...
Not a single deck without PA for this piece of shit.
These things were... that's not true. Well, partially true. Okay. These are actual reveals that were announced a couple days ago. So we're going to start with the one that was announced by the Play Artifact Twitter. 7 mana, Champion of the Ancient, creep. 2 attack, 6 health. I don't remember if I mentioned it was green, but it's green just in case I didn't. The play effect is modify this creep with 1 attack, 1 health,
this is
and
a real
1 cleave for each enemy.
This is real. Everyone thinks this is still fake. No, this is a real card. This
real
is a real card.
Yeah, real card. What do you guys think of this card? Now, I was told it's okay if we say if we like it or don't like it based on our actual experiences. So that's fine.
Shit! This card sucks!
Yeah, this card blows.
This card sucks! Dude, what the fuck? Are you in a situation where it gets more than, like, let's say somebody has a swarm deck. There's a goddamn literally 30 dudes in this deck. And then you're like, here comes Champion of the Ancient, baby. He gonna hit the guy in front of him. And one dude to each side. Gotcha, baby. For 100 million damage. Who fucking cares? It's so stupid.
I will
the
say.
The only way this card is
not
good.
It's not good in Constructed. But it might be good in other stuff.
This card
sucks.
Yeah, other stuff, Slax. Think of the other stuff.
I think for seven mana, that's where I think it really hurts. Mm. I just look at that, and yeah, to get the maximum potential out of the effect, you feel like you put yourself in such a terrible position, I think.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah,
oh, sorry, Slax. No, please.
If somebody offered to give me 5 Champion of the Ancients or 1 Thunderhide pack, I choose the fucking 7 mana Thunderhide pack every goddamn time.
That's
this
true.
Thing sucks.
Anyway, yeah, the mana cost does hurt, no doubt.
I think that it's important to understand, for those of you guys who look at that mana cost and maybe think this card is, like, more on the level. From something like a Hearthstone perspective, 7 mana is more late game in this deck than it would be, in Artifact, than it would be in something like Hearthstone, because there's 3 kind of turns per mana increase, right? Like, 7 mana is very late game. It's something that kind of needs to be able to win you the game.
I could see some funky stuff with this card, and, like, it could potentially work in, I think, Constructed. But every attempt that I've done with it has been not the best.
This could be one of those cards that ends up being really good in, you know, an eventual later expansion when cards are just added in that somehow amplifies power in some respects. So
sure. If somehow having more enemies is a good thing for you. This card is really going to shine.
All right. Next card. Also revealed by the Play Artifact Twitter. Arcane Censure, a 4-mana black spell. Modify the enemy tower with -1 mana.
This card sucks.
This card sucks.
I as much as I don't like the card, I think I like the concept of it. Being able to slow down your opponents, especially I think we saw, you know, imagine you're playing some of the decks from PAX, and, you know, Time of Triumph, and suddenly it doesn't pop on the same turn that, you know, they thought it was, right? That could provide some value. But it's kind of slow.
That's the main problem, is that it's very slow. Yeah. Like, I agree with completely. The idea is great. And in theory, like, oh, this would fit great with this deck, especially against this, you know, whatever mana cost that they're trying to go for, like the 7 mana for blue or whatever. But
yeah,
actually executing it, just, it feels real difficult.
Yeah, I never feel real good when I'm like, surprise, blue deck, -1 mana. It's like, okay, I'll see you next round. Thank you. Thanks for spending 4 of your mana, you idiot. I will say this is a very important card, though. Have you guys ever been in a real fist fight before in real life, like a real fight?
I have not.
People always think, go for the groin. Don't do it. You try to grab this guy's dick and he's going to fucking pummel your face. This is what happens if you're in a real fist fight and you try to grab a guy's dick. He's going to punch you in the back of the head.
I guess we didn't really speak about the art. The art is amazing. Rubik is getting destroyed by Silencer.
He thinks he can grab onto his schlong and make it out of there. It's not going to happen. He's fucking dead. The guy's dead. Kick the groin. Do not try to grab it. That's too close if you're in a real fight.
I mean, I feel like this card has potential to be good as well if there's a bunch of other cards that accompany it that can, you know, make it synergize well in some respects. But it's tough to say right now.
It sucks.
I'm with Slacks on this one.
Moving on to another card revealed by the Play Artifact Twitter. Now, this one I think you guys will like. It's a 4-mana blue spell called N1 for Me. Choose a hero, put a base copy of a random item equipped by that hero into your hand.
I have a deck called Double Trouble that is based around this card completely. What people might not realize, seeing this from the first time, put a copy of a random item in your hand. Most people consider that for enemies. You can do it for yourself too, which means that if you have a deck that's mostly based on just making 25 gold super fast, you get to clone your own item and put it on again. And these are like game-breaking items. You get to do that 3 times if you're super lucky. Yep. It is so good.
Before you guys go in, can I tell a little story?
Sure.
It's gonna talk about a very like small mechanic that maybe a lot of people don't know about, but it is something that we talked about at PAX on stream. And this is how Slacks knows about this card, by the way. Because I ran a gold deck, right, with the old Payday, doubling my gold left, right, and center, but I combined it with blue.
Oh, my fucking God. Because of this card, I'm so goddamn angry.
And one for me, I get a Thunderhide, what are they called? The actual
Horn,
item?
Horn of the Alpha.
Sorry. You get Horn of the Alpha. You put it on, let's say this is the scenario where I made him rage quit. I have one hero in this lane, okay? And he thinks he's real hot shit, right? Because his tower has like 30 HP, like 25 HP. I put a Horn of the Alpha down on this hero. I pop it. We're good to go. That's 14 damage to the tower. He's like, oh, he can't do anything else. That's fine. Well, guess what, motherfucker? Slacks.
And I remember.
One for me. And one for me. Copy that. I put it on the same hero. It destroys the old Horn of the Alpha, but it allows me to activate Horn of the Alpha again, and I win the game, thus creating the rage quit opportunity for Slacks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Oh, you're so smart. Great red.
All right,
black
continue,
pick.
Please.
You're a fucking genius. Oh my God. Anyway, it is a really, really strong card. It's a lot of fun. The possibilities are endless. This is, I think, the one card that can. The first time I've seen like an artifact super rush deck, where it's just like round 2, 2 Horn of the Alphas, 3 Horn of the Alphas, game's over. But go ahead.
This card is very competitive. It's on the level. I would say the biggest way to describe like why this card is really good is because card games often boil down to kind of like a rock, paper, scissors relationship. For example, in something like Magic, you have kind of the aggro triangle, which is like mid-range beats aggro, control beats mid-range, aggro beats control. And any tools that... one of the challenges with deck building is you kind of will eat some level of kind of rock, paper, scissors relationship. So if you're in a matchup where your deck archetype is inherently unfavored, this card kind of allows you to be very flexible in terms of giving you exactly what you need within that matchup, right? Yeah. Like you use it for something kind of that helps you survive in matchups where you just need to survive. You use it for a big finisher when you need that. The flexibility of this card is really strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, going back to some of the more beta stuff, I think there was a time where Jake's favorite archetype, black red, was very, very popular. Generated a lot of gold.
Black red too.
Dude, one of my favorites. And I think there was these gold generating decks. Utilizing Payday, trying to get these top items, and then this was kind of the first one that was discovered to kind of counter those decks. And what Swim was talking about is, you don't necessarily need to be running these gold decks. You know, you are just, you know, piggybacking off right. opponents and all their kind of stuff. And now you're pulling in and now the play field's completely even. And, you know, now you're stronger than ever. I thought that was one of the more interesting times kind of during the beta when people were figuring it out.
Of course, the thing to keep in mind that it is a random item on that here. So if you have more than one equipped, you have to take that 50-50 or the 33%. Right, which I've had to do occasionally in dire circumstances.
Oh, that's crazy. I would never take that chance. Jeez, if someone has a sword and a horn of the alpha,
why do you
gonna
have
take
such trouble
50-50?
Saying short sword?
You guys could just say that. Swim hit me.
Short sword?
Short sword.
Okay. Is it like a tongue twister?
For him.
Well, I have an accent.
I was going to mention anyway. That, yes, of course.
What was I talking about? Oh, right. Now, this card is very good against Roshan. If the other guy gets the 25 Aegis, you just copy it back, and then you put it back on Roshan. Roshan gets his own Aegis? That's crazy.
That is pretty good, actually. That's actually very next level. I like it. I like it.
The card doesn't exist, but I'm already thinking about the meta. That's how far ahead I am.
If Val was watching, they need to put Roche in the game immediately. Okay, next card was revealed. Was this today? I believe by Rob AJG.
Mm-hmm. He's cool. I like that guy.
It is a 5-mana green spell, Condemn All Equipped Items.
Oh, I love this card so much. This is the biggest fucking cock block card in existence. You just let them now, green decks are all about, I play with sustainability. Green decks survive. They go. And sometimes you're going to lose some stuff. You're going to lose some money. I love this card. Looking at somebody's disappointment when they drop that horn of the alpha and they're just like, here comes the big, and then everything goes away. God, it feels so good. And then, you guys also, if you destroy an item that provides something like health. Let's say that they have an item, a Stonehall Cloak was revealed, right, at PAX?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's say you have Stonehall Cloak, and they have a bunch of added HP. If you destroy that item, they die. So sometimes you just play this in the
possibly
lane.
Possibly die, yeah.
Everybody just dies because they... You think you're so rich. This is a working man's card, all right? I've been down in the dirt. I ain't the 1%, and then boom, get fucked. 1%, gotcha. Drain the swamp. Corrosive mist.
Looks like you're going into the swamp.
Have
I
you
think
guys
there.
Seen anybody play this? I actually have never seen this played, or maybe once, actually.
I've played it. Because after, I was talking about that meta where everybody's doing all these copying and kind of doing that. This is the counter to that.
Right.
These two cards are actually very synergistic, I think, in terms of like N1 for me and Corrosive Mist is once people start copying these big, big, big ones, just wipe it out when they show up with, two Horn of the Alphas and they put them both down on that same turn. Just it's gone now.
You copy their Horn of the Alpha and then you destroy theirs.
If you're playing green-blue, but I don't think I was playing green-blue at that time.
Why would you copy it and then let them activate it and then destroy it? You're a madman.
No, right? They might not necessarily activate it. Nobody, like Sunset said, very few people I think have ever actually played this card, I think,
yes.
In the game.
Very rare.
Uh, But I have it in a few of my green decks for sure.
The payback for the troll is worth it. I have it in every green deck. Just seeing somebody, I don't care if I win, I care about making the other person sad. And this is the ultimate sad card. It's so good.
Yeah, I've tried this as well. It's actually, it's not bad. It's basically like a tech option. It's good in certain matchups. I think like one thing to understand about how to build around this card is it incentivizes you to kind of go for big items, you know, the slack strategy. Because you play something like your own Horn of the Alpha or whatever, and while you're just saving up gold, not buying items, this kind of symmetrical effect can basically be much more skewed towards the opponent.
I love it. It's a double-edged sword in a lot of ways, right? Because it does destroy your own items as well. So it is an interesting one. I will admit there's a few cards that I'm just not sure about because I haven't tried them and I haven't felt like trying them. This is one of them. But it has a very cool effect for sure. Okay. So let's move on to the hero that was revealed yesterday by Savitch Tidehunter. Red hero. 2 attack, 1 armor, 18 health. He comes with the Ravage ability. He has a 4-round cooldown. Stun Tidehunter's enemy neighbors this round, and each other enemy has a 50% chance to be stunned this round. Let's talk about this before we move on to his signature card. What do you guys
think of
this
hero? This card sucks!
We gotta have some words, Lex.
You're gonna find, I think, two sets of parties here. The Seraxian Flax party and I think the Swim party. I think I'm somewhere in between, but
I'm in between as
definitely,
well.
I think there's a lot of extremists on this card.
Yeah. Start off, Swim. Hit me.
Okay, so to start off, I don't think this card is like OP, but I think it is definitely like a competitive potential card. The first thing about Ravage is with a 4 cooldown, you're pretty much going to be using that once per game, but the effect this can have if you play around it is very, very strong. Like it can usually just win out a game in the late game, even without really getting lucky. And its card, which we haven't pulled up here yet, but when we get to it, his card is really what makes this.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Wait, what? What?
We haven't
we haven't
put up the card. Well, it has been revealed. I just haven't put it up yet because I want to talk about Ravage and Tide.
And I think Ravage is one of those things where I think it really, you know, there's a very high chance that you're probably going to have Tidehunter up on the turn that Ravage is up. You know, he's just got a lot of HP. The armor even prevents even more damage from coming in. You know, so if he's in front of creeps, like, there's no way. But, you know, when you actually be able to hit Ravage, it can very much slow down opponents. And I think especially if it's in the right lane, I think it can be really, really strong.
So what I will say is my opinion of Tidehunter, if we're not including his card at the moment, is that based on his stats and his ability, he is below average on all accounts. I think Ravage, like Swim said, is used once a game, sometimes twice. A lot of times, repositioning is extremely important for this hero. Like having Blink Dagger, being able to move from one lane to another, or Phase Boost, as we saw at PAX, being able to move to a different side of the lane. If you don't have that luxury, like let's say you're going against the lane that's super wide, you have tons of creeps against you, you're taking a 50-50 chance in a lot of cases of stunning the heroes, which feels really bad for, like, that's his entire purpose in the game is to get that Ravage off in a very crucial moment, and to have a 50-50 chance really feels god awful a lot of the times, you know.
Boom. Why leave it to chance? That's why this hero sucks.
I will say one other thing about this card.
All right.
Because you play 3 heroes in round 1, 1 hero in round 2, and the last hero in round 3 in a game, it is a kind of an important deck building niche that you have like a kind of card that maybe isn't really stats oriented. There's a few of these in the game and I'm not sure which ones I can actually mention, but Tidehunter is a good example of that. Like his stat line matters less if he comes out in round 3, you get Ravage like 2 turns from then. Hey, you're feeling it.
That's a good point. Agree.
Okay, right, the hero's only good. Hero's only good if every item in your deck starts with the word Stonehall. That's the only time I've ever seen this hero be good. You know?
It sounds like a meme, but it's actually kind of true because he's always around and he always gets that extra tick. It feels pretty good if you get that early on. I'll agree. So his card, his signature card, is the 1 mana spell Kraken Shell. Modify a red hero with +1 armor and get initiative. Very strong card.
Also, as for 1 mana, this card is amazing. you know, I think getting initiative back, and we were talking about earlier, you know, Swim talking about how important and how unique that factor is within this game. I think we're going to see a lot of people. I think that's one of the hardest things to teach people. And when you see these cards that allow you to get initiative back, you know, I think it's going to really change the way people look at the game and realize, oh, I need to look at some of these cards and put them in my deck because of how much value it brings back to me.
Oh, yeah. Initiative is, I mean, it has the potential to just win you the game out, right? And with a card like this that says get initiative, I mean, one of the best ways to answer it, like in a deep meta where everyone is kind of playing for like that last turn initiative to just win the game, the best answer to it is to kind of play more of it to counter it, right?
Right.
Like you see people bringing the card like this.
And remember, modify is permanent. So that's actually another important point. Obviously, initiative is the biggest part of this card. But if you, if you compare this to Keep the Bold's 5-mana, modify 1 attack, 1 armor, this one, one gives you 1 armor.
I was literally about to bring that up. I mean, you know? It's a very...
Five mana sucks.
But 1 armor. But 1 attack, 2.
And I you have to look at the stat lines, I think, as well, right?
Yeah, like, yeah,
I
mean, of course.
Keep obviously can bring different things to the table. I think it's unfortunate that it's one of the few heroes that doesn't have an ability. And I think that's also kind of interesting, is that, you know, how are you going to fit these into to the decks? But I could see Tidehunter definitely being one of those, you know, we're talking about splash heroes or, like, heroes that, you know, fit into different style of decks, or maybe it's something you want to splash. Tidehunter is great.
Yo, you slap a short sword on this, it eats creeps all day.
That's true.
Dang. Exactly.
That's true.
You get it to four, it feels good. It feels really good.
I will say that if the easiest way for me to tell if I'm playing against an artifact player that has any idea what they're doing is that they always have some kind of card in their deck that says get initiative. That's it. I mean, that just means that they're ready to roll on something. It also, though, means that they're tryhards and they're easy to beat. So tryhards are very easy to beat an artifact. You just have to pretend like you're stupid. And then they do initiative. They think that you have a plan. I don't have a goddamn plan, fool. Get initiative. And then they waste those cards early. And then you just go for the late.
Dude, you're playing high level jazz here, I think, you know?
They're playing Tidehunter. Everything's going to be fine. Satan will make sure that 50% gets me through it. Thank you, Dark Lord. I'll be okay. Take your initiative. All right? Whatever.
All right. So, with that, amazing end, I think we can end finally with the actual card reveal of the day.
The real card.
His name.
The real card.
His name, as you might have guessed, is Centaur. Warrunner, the red hero, 4 attack, 14 health. He comes with Return, which is a continuous effect to retaliate. It's the same as Legion, I know. But it's okay. He has a shit ton more HP. And let's just talk about this alone, and then we can talk about his card, which I really love. Okay? Please continue.
Your card.
I thought I was thinking you were going to go off on this.
Monologue. Go.
So what I'm going to say about this card is when I first started playing, I really wanted to try a deck around him, but I was really bad at the game, so I couldn't figure it out, right? And now that I'm much better at the game, I haven't really been playing with that much, honestly. But I will say one thing. Of the heroes that have been revealed, actually, I can just say this flat out. I think he's the third best red hero. I know this. You guys are gonna think I'm crazy.
This card sucks.
So we have Axe. I rank as number one. Legion as number two. I think Centaur's the third best, and I think Bristleback is a little bit overrated at number four. That's my rank list.
I think it's always hard to put rank lists like that because it really depends on the deck that you're building, right? Like that. True. I think all those that's cards awesome. Can be.
We all know Axe is number one.
Yeah, let's be real.
Let's be real right now. You're probably not wrong, actually.
Yeah.
I might agree with that one. I think everybody's got an Axe at number one. But looking at this card, I think you know you're able to kill creeps. You're doing damage to heroes, especially some of the lower HP heroes like. That you see in black, you know, with the retaliate, you're ending up taking these heroes out in one turn. And that's huge value. we'll talk about more, I think, a signature card after, but I think it's it's really interesting to kind of see.
Yeah, I can bring up his, we've already tweeted it out, so I'm just going to bring up the signature card now.
Oh, well, what, this is what makes it interesting.
His signature card is a one mana spell, double edge, give a red hero plus 8 attack and minus 8 armor this round.
God, this card's so fucking good.
It's
this
good
card is so incredible. Yeah. And you don't think it's good. You read that and you're like, Jesus, minus 8 armor, so you make him a glass cannon. Sunspan, tell him about it, baby.
All right, so there's a couple things, and I'm sure Swim can, I know he's recently played a lot of Centaur, so he can elaborate onto this. But first and foremost, return, the important thing to note, and we mentioned this at PAX, the way that Retaliate works is it's a different instance of damage, right? So against armor, it's not great. Let's say a Zeus has 7 health and 2 armor, right? Centaur is going to be doing 4 damage to him with the attack, minus the 2 armor, so that's 2 attack. And then the instance of return, which is a retaliate, does 0 damage, in fact. But, which obviously retaliates terrible against armor. But against negative armor, it is unfucking believable. So you do 4 damage plus 2 if Zeus has negative 2 armor, let's say, plus an additional 4 from just retaliate because it's a different instance. So very cool against negative armor. So double edge, the reason it's really good, well, first of all, obviously it stacks. So you guys seen the instances where you put 3 on one hero and you just hit that tower, just beat the shit out of somebody. You can also use it on an enemy hero to lower their armor to be able to kill them if they're already killing your hero or something like that. There's a lot of cool instances with this card that feels very, very good for sure.
The card is so interesting because of that one word. A red hero. Doesn't have to be your red hero. It could be their red heroes. And it's freaking amazing to have a centaur in like a blue deck with a Zeus. You just do one damage, play one card in this, which is totally manageable because it has one mana, and you just insta-kill a hero. And let me tell you how many goddamn times Sunspan has played a game with me. I think I'm winning. My tower has 30 HP, and this asshole puts for 3 mana... 8, 16, 24 fucking damage on one tower. What am I supposed to do against that?
It's one of those cards that's really powerful when you know that the enemy has already spent all their mana and there's nothing they can do. And you just have a hero, a red hero, just sitting alone hitting a tower, right?
Or if they have no heroes in the lane.
Yeah, empty lanes. Yeah. I think that's kind of the more interesting thing, you know, you're baiting out spells. We're talking about initiative and like when knowing when to pass. And this is one of those cards I think it's really important to know. Because if you play this immediately once the turn starts, you have negative 8 armor. They do some spell or just, you know, some sort of attack that hits you for 2 damage. Like, boom, that's 10 damage right there immediately off the top. Like, you know, it's insane how much the, you know, knowing when to play this at the right time is important.
Excuse me, 28 damage because the centaur's original 4 damage. So, yeah. 28 damage for 3 goddamn mana. Okay? Yeah. That's real fun when they start with 3 of these in the first hand and no creep is blocking. Let me tell you, good times.
Well,
that,
it also
maybe there
says,
should be a freaking mulligan.
It also says for the round, right? So if you have negative 8 armor plus however much more, if you stack them on, you're going to have that for the rest of the entire round. So let's say you're in the first lane, you use it.
Oh, yeah.
If they're in the second lane or the third lane, they have a spell that can work across lanes. You will get destroyed as well. So it is absolutely the true meaning of double edge. That's why I love this card so much. It's feels good in Dota, feels good in Artifact as well.
I agree.
Swim, you've had a lot of experience with this hero.
Oh, I have, actually. The best way to use this, and the thing that feels best, is when you play this against red. It's like you guys said, you can use it on their hero, but super reliable. Something like round 1, you know, your 2 red heroes spawn across from each other. Oh, on the same lane, but maybe they're hitting creeps. You just use it on their hero. Your creep just destroys them. This is... Yeah.
True.
This is a super, super common scenario. It's just like in that situation, you use just one mana, deal 8 damage. You can just eat heroes in round 1. It's basically like an anti-red card. It does great if both players are running red.
Mm-hmm. I do love the all-in strat, though, because sometimes I've been in a game where I have stacked 2 of these on a red hero for fun because I thought it'd be funny. And then they had a card which killed the creep in front of them, and then I felt real dumb. So I like the all-in aspect. It's a lot of fun.
All right, cool. I think we have finished the podcast, my friends. Congratulations. Aww. You made it to the end. Let me bring back the screen with our faces. There we go. So thank you for joining us. I'll let you guys have some last words, but of course you can follow us on Twitter, SunsFanTV, SirActionSlacks, Conrad Jansen, and... Can we talk about your Twitter handle, Swim? It's Swim Strim. Is it just stream incorrectly spelled. Is that what it is?
A strim. You guys don't know a strim?
Yeah. You guys don't know.
These guys are fucking normies. Don't worry about it.
Strim?
You get me. Yeah.
All right. Tell me.
You've never watched a strim before?
That's my job. I'm a strimmer. I professionally strim on Twitch.
Okay, no,
I did a couple strims.
It turns out I did understand. It's just at the same time, I don't.
You're just not hip. You're not hip with the kids, I think. That's your problem.
I'm an old man, I guess.
He's a normie. All right.
Any last words, my friends, before we bid everybody adieu?
I like
everybody
all
thinks
these
this. Hold on. Everybody's saying this means dick in Russian. This is Nyx. It's just it looks backwards to you. Okay? Just saying. No, I got a couple tweets.
That's on you. That's
this is an official shirt. Dota shirt. It does not say dick. All right, anyhow, please.
I like all the slow card reveals. I think they're a lot of fun. I can't wait till you guys get more cards because it makes my life a lot less stressful because these podcasts scare the fuck out of me.
Yeah, it's
not knowing what I can talk about or not. So the slow reveal is very nice, but let me tell you, it is killing me inside. Just reveal all the cards already. All right, I'm freaking out over here. I almost leaked like 7 different cards in this particular podcast. Too. Jesus. All right, I was so close.
Conrad.
Anyway.
No, thank you for having me. I actually really enjoyed seeing what cards people come up with. I think there's a lot of interesting potential things, especially with not, you know, talking about Jake, is like there's not that much revealed at this time. And so people are coming up with all these cool concepts. So I'm very excited to see what happens there. And then I'm excited to see, you know, have the fans enjoy and get to check out more of these heroes, more of these cards coming out and see what happens.
Swim, strim. End us, my friend.
Slack's kind of said my thing. I mean, you know, more card reveals. I'm really glad that they're pumping out these card reveals. They're doing like what, like almost one a day right now.
Mm-hmm.
And more than it's just a lot to talk about. It's kind of nice being stuck for so long without being able to say anything. Yeah. Now we can actually start communicating about how good or bad some of these cards are.
Indeed.
I think favorite part is that everybody thinks some card, you know, there's like Tidehunter, for instance. Some people think it's really good. Some people think it's really bad.
Let's be real. Not to get off on a tangent. There's no way Tidehunter is amazing. He can be good. Yeah. There's no world he's amazing. There's zero. It's just not. Come on. Let's be real.
But that's what I'm saying. I think there's going to be a lot of cards that are going to be revealed. Going to have a lot of conversation around them.
Yes.
And a lot of people who are familiar with both cards. One person's going to say this card is one of the best cards. And there's another person that's going to say this card is terrible.
And not to say that we're going to be right every time either.
Most interesting part of our artifact is that everybody's opinion right now is both right and wrong.
Very true.
This sounds a lot of fun. I think I'm going to make a deck built on Tidehunter and whatever that card -1 mana is. That really sucks. I'm making guys.
Make decks that are only revealed.
I'll go 4 colors.
Revealed decks. Dope.
Excellent. All right, friends. Until next time, we're signing out. Have a good one. We'll see you.